series on RT, BBC Two has just finished. It was a combination of Antiques Roadshow meets The Hoarder Next Door. Collectaholics, presented by Mark Hill, who isn't a psychologist but an antiques expert, but probably should be a psychologist. He's in London. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
It's good to have you on the programme with us this morning. It's funny, somebody just texted in to say that they picked up a collection of second-hand copies of Sue Townsend's books on Adrian Mole some time ago, which might be slightly enhanced in value now following the sad news that she died. That's what happens in your world, isn't it?
Well, it can be, yes, and it happens in the art world too. You find an artist passes on and their work is reappraised and in many cases rises in value. But it's not always consistent. Sometimes you find that it's just a little bit of a peak because everybody's interested in it and as things calm down. But I'm sure Sue Townsend's novels, I mean, they're legendary, so yes. I'm sure they'll always be popular.
They'll always be popular, that's for sure. And let's talk about some of the things you saw. Congratulations on the programme, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Not at all. You saw a guy called James had a Star Wars collection that consisted of 35,000 pieces. Now, when you see this and you're looking at this, Mark, what goes through your head initially?
Well, what a waste was my first reaction, to be quite honest, because as you'll see when you see the programme, he literally filled rooms with cardboard boxes. And, you know, I've got collections myself and I don't look at everything every day, but I try and make sure that it comes out at some point. And this, it just, you couldn't see any of it. What's the point of owning it if you can't enjoy it? And at least try and revolve things on a shelf so you get them out for a little bit of time or something. Yeah. That was my big reaction. What a waste.
Right. And so he had the contents of his collection spread over two rooms. Nothing on display, nothing in a cabinet, nothing for people to go and see, enjoy. I have them and because I have them. I mean, there doesn't seem too much point to it.
No, he loved the films. I mean, he absolutely lived and breathed the films, as did the rest of his family. And I believe they go to conventions and they dress up, which is a wonderful thing to do. But I think it was just the extent of the collection and the fact that it was taking up so much space. Yeah. We had to find a solution for him.
And what was the solution?
We ended up doing pretty much what you've said. I mean, it's a fairly obvious thing to do. We cleared one of the rooms. We made sure that it was nice and empty, not just piled with boxes in corners or filling an entire room, and built him some proper storage cabinets and put things out on display properly so you could enjoy it. And, you know, nostalgia is one of the most important things about collecting. And when he saw that room, you could see, even though he's, I think, in his early 40s, he looked like a little boy all over again.
Mm-hmm. Like Christmas morning. What about the value? I mean, in a collection of 35,000 pieces, are you looking at between 1 and 10 of any real value, or is it all valuable, or is it in its entirety a value?
Well, I think together, obviously, there's a great value, but you're absolutely right, Ryan. A lot of the pieces won't have great financial value. However, for a collector who's looking to complete their set or doesn't have one that's in mint and boxed condition, which, of course, lots of collectors really want, there could be great value in that piece, even though it might only be worth, you know, to our pockets a couple of pounds. But we've seen over the past few years that Star Wars figures, particularly the very early ones, the late 1970s, have just rocketed in value, some fetching sort of £14,000-£15,000.
Crikey. For like what sort of figures?
Well, you'd not have to open them. I believe this one was a medical droid that appeared in Empire Strikes Back, fetched a complete fortune recently, and a whole set fetched many thousands of pounds.
Right,
and
right.
I think this had been at auction a little while ago, and I think a very wise grandmother had bought her grandson one set to play with and one set that Granny's going to put in the cupboard and look after for you.
Wow.
Wise woman.
That's some foresight, Mark.
It is, isn't
That's
it?
That's some foresight. And it's funny, when you look at the likes of all the internet millionaires and dot-comers and all that crowd from Silicon Valley and who all made their money now in their late 30s or thereabouts, they're all crazy for this stuff, for the Star Wars style. They tend to be kind of geeky, nerdy, very bright, very wealthy. And when you look at J.J. Abrams, who's kind of a great director, and his headquarters is all memorabilia, probably very expensive stuff, but that will fuel this end of the market.
Well, I think that's true, and it'll fuel it at the top end of the market. I mean, geeks shall inherit the earth, as I think somebody said at one point.
Yeah.
But it's big business and it's big money, and it is all about perhaps being able to have that piece that your mum and dad said you couldn't have when you were a kid.
Yeah.
It's about reliving those happy times. It's good, honest, clean fun.
I love looking at there's one page in a paper on a Saturday here which talks about auctions and places to go and what you want. And one of the things I was intrigued when I looked it up, investigated a bit further, is like an old house, the contents of a house being sent put up on for sale, as you know, we only too well. And one of the things I was struck by was the amount of stuffed animals, and I mean taxidermy. And honestly, there was like one thing, it was a case of little birds, maybe about 50 birds in this case or thereabouts. And it went for big money, as did the stuffed this or stuffed that. Is this a thing? Is this happening? Is taxidermy and this end of the market busy now?
Very, very busy. What do you think of it, Ryan? Do you like it?
Do you know what I like about it?
Go on.
I think I'd like one piece just for the freakiness of it.
What would you have?
I think, you know, there's a beautiful museum there in Exhibition Road in London, which is the Natural History Museum, and there's a section with all these kind of like stuffed birds. And there's one particularly with about five or six, there's just loads of birds. So I'd like a few of those, but only to spook out the kids. Like, I wouldn't like it out of any friendly love. I'd like it as to be the thing that they bring their friends into the house and go, look what the scary man has in his Victorian corner. That's why I want it.
But do you know, that's part of what drives a lot of the collectors. Taxidermy has seen this massive boom in terms of popularity and in terms of prices. Partly it's people looking for something quirky. We don't all want things from Scandinavian megastores that are the same
exactly.
as next doors and the same as next doors. We want the freaky birds. We want, I don't know, a green parrot that sits on, you know, on the corner of something.
Yeah.
But it's also a lot of natural history people. I mean, these things died a long, long time ago. I'm certainly not saying they should be made, you know, again in many instances unless the animal died of natural causes.
Mm.
But there is also a great sort of natural history in recording our world around us. Very Victorian thing to do.
Yeah, that's where I was coming from. Victoria / freakiness. You talked about Shirley had a doll and a pram collection. And that was, again, taking over her home. But her story is a little on the sad side.
I don't think it was necessarily sad. I mean, of course, she'd had a doll as a child, and this was a great precious doll to her, a porcelain doll. It was very expensive, and it was given to her as a Christmas present, a landmark sort of Christmas present, and it got broken. And I think ever since then, when she was a child and her beloved doll was broken, I think she's been searching for that doll, as Mel said, I think. And yes, it's true, but what a wonderful way to search, by enjoying and building up a collection like that.
Yeah, that's true. And I was curious to ask you about the sense of the search. There was a time when the search meant making many, many phone calls. You know, Fly Fishing by J.R. Hartley, if you remember the ad, and elements of that. And the joy of going from antique shop to antique shop and to village to town to city to try and find it. And now you're kind of a few clicks away. Is that made it easier and more pleasant, or is it taking all the fun out of the search?
Well, I still think that the chase, the thrill of the hunt is part of the most exciting thing about collecting. It's, you know, not necessarily always the wet field in the middle of some, you know, countryside at 4 a.m, but there is that little thrill when you find something fantastic. What it's enabled us to do is to talk to each other much easier. So collectors in Ohio can talk to collectors in County Armagh. It works incredibly well.
Yeah.
And also it means you don't have to just collect what's in your area. So if you do want to collect, for whatever reason, brightly coloured, vibrant Italian glass, you can buy it from across the world.
Yeah,
I think it's done what it's done for everything else. It's communication, and it's also given a little bit of transparency of value. Whereas American pottery might have been very rare in Dublin, and Balique might have been very unusual to find in Ohio, even though it went all over the world. Of course, now Balique collectors can live wherever they are in the world, Tokyo, Australia, and they can get a great collection of Irish antiques sent over.
There's a touch of opera and ballet about antique dealing and buying and watching, in the sense that if people think that it belongs to another type of person and it's a bit far away from them, a bit otherworldly. But in fact, having had a little poke around the shallow end of the market myself in recent years, I realised that really there's lots of very, very affordable things to look at, and loads of fun in attending an auction, be it virtually or in situ. It's a fun game, but it's for everyone. It can be done by anyone who has an interest, who want to buy a few coins or an old movie poster or whatever it might be.
Oh, absolutely right. I'm actually in Birmingham at the moment, and I'm just about to disappear off to the Antiques for Everyone Fair, which is the NEC, the National Exhibition Centre. And it's got that name for a reason.
Yeah.
There is something for everyone in that building, regardless of your budget. I mean, you can go in and spend. In fact, I spotted today, or last night rather, when I was coming back, today I might go back and buy it, a panel from a 19th century Chinese robe. And it's almost, it's got cloud, like a cloud pattern on it, but it's almost abstract. Now, we're talking about about something that is well over 100 years old, that was worn by probably a relatively wealthy Chinese lady.
Yeah.
There's a story behind it. There's a history behind it. This is tangible. This is living history. Framed up in a little mount, it was £16.
There you go, not bad.
So you could easily blow more than that on some rubbishy Far Eastern, rather amusingly, vase that was mass-produced.
Yeah, yeah, and a much more fun story in the house as well to tell. Somebody says, I have a small collection of Beano and Dandy comics from the 40s and 50s. I'd love to be able to display them. Could you ask your guest the best way to do this? Will the light not fade them?
You're absolutely right. Keep them out of the light. You certainly don't want them in direct sunlight. You can get glass if you're very, if you really have to display them near a window, that will actually block out the light that will fade your comic front. But I would tend to display them. Lots of collectors tend to get them put into sort of like little sachets almost, I think is probably the best description. And what that will do is it will preserve your comic. In America, it's big business. So they'll sort of almost lock it into this transparent sachet, and it will be graded. So it'll come up with, you know, this is a 9.5 comic, which is really, really good, rather than a 1.5 comic, which is really, quite frankly, virtually toilet paper. So you've got that side of it too. You get a good grade, you get a good quality condition.
Well, I have to say, there'll be a run on attics around the country, and probably a lot of people going home to their mothers or fathers' attics as well, doing the same thing. It's been good to talk to you, Mark. Good luck at the NEC, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much indeed, Ryan.
Okay,
thank you.
All the best.
Take care.
Mark Hill there.